So we know there's a major machlokes, the Rashi Ramban, exactly when Parshas Mishpatim is taking place. We know that according to Rashi, Ein Muktam Uchar B'Torah, so when you come to the end of Parshas Mishpatim, and you find in Perek Chav Dalet Pasuk Aleph, a whole discussion of Kabbalah Satorah, according to Rashi, if you look in Rashi, when is this happening? According to Rashi, Parsha Zu Nemra Kodem Aseres HaDibros B'Dalet B'Sivan. Nemr lo alei. So, page 440 in the Stone Chumash, Perek Chav Dalet Pasuk Aleph, Rashi saying this actually happens before what happens in Yisrael. That for some reason, you have to understand the reason, the Torah bookends Kabbalah Satorah around Parshas Mishpatim. The Ramban actually has a little bit of a different perspective. The Ramban says that this, in fact, does happen after the Aseres HaDibros. This happens the day after the revelation, whether it was Vav Sivan, Zayin Sivan, that's when these events happen in Perek Chav Dalet. The second half, if you will, of Kabbalah Satorah really is part and parcel of the Kabbalah Satorah experience, but not before, after. Why that is, we're not going to get into that right now. The Rav has an interesting take on it in the Chumash that was published last year by the OU with explanations, commentaries of the Rav interspersed, but it is important to note that this Machlokas Rashi Ramban exists, and it has many implications, many implications. I'd like to start, though, with the last pasuk, and this maybe we'll get to some of them as we'll see how much time we have tonight. But I wanted to start with really the last pasuk in the Parsha. Vayavo Moshe betocha anon, vayal el hahar, vayim Moshe bahar arba'im yom, arba'im laila. Moshe enters into the cloud, and he goes up top of the mountain, and Moshe's on the top of the mountain for 40 days and for 40 nights. We know that that didn't work out so well for the Jewish people, the 40 days and 40 nights. There's a time lag. We know this Parshas Truma Tetzava, which is another big machlokas, Rashi, Ramban, when Truma and Tetzava were actually commanded. But we see here that Moshe Rabbeinu was up on getting the Torah for 40 days, 40 nights. So there's a fascinating medrash, Yalkut Shimoni, that Rav Henoch Leibowitz Zatzal quotes in the Chiddushei HaLev, that tells a story that one time, it says, Vayi Moshe Bahar Abayim Yom Barbayim Laila, Rabbi Yochanan was once walking from Tveria to Tzipori. This is both in the northern Israel, and he was walking with Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba. And they came to one field, and Rabbi Yochanan said, you know, I sold this field so I could support myself to learn. They're walking a little further. They come by an olive orchard, an orchard of olive trees. And Rabbi Yochanan tells Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba, you know, I also used to own this. And I sold this just so I could stay in learning. And then they walk by a vineyard. And Rabbi Yochanan says, you know, this vineyard used to be mine. And I sold this also. So I should be able to sit and learn just a little bit longer. And Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba starts to cry. Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba starts to cry. Yochanan says to him, why are you crying? So Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba answers Rabbi Yochanan, I'm crying because you don't have anything left over for old age. Meaning, you know, this is your retirement funds. You used up all your savings. You sold the field that you own. You sold the vineyard. You sold the olive orchard. What do you have now to support yourself when you get older? So he says, Chia, my son, that's the Lashon of the Medrash, he says, I sold something that was given in 6 days, and I bought something that was given for 40 days and 40 nights. We know the whole world was created in 6 days. Kisheshes yom masa Hashem es shemayim es haaretz. But the Torah was given over 40 days and 40 nights, the pasuk in this week's parasha, vi Moshe bahar arboim yom varboim loyla. That Moshe is with Hashem for 40 days and 40 nights. So Rav Henoch Leibowitz asks, what's going on in this medrash? Strange medrash. Rav Chiya Bar Abba wasn't an idiot. I mean, Rav Chiya Bar Abba was Rav Chiya Bar Abba. He was a huge tzaddik, huge Talmud Chacham, a great scholar in his own right, often quoted in the Gemara. Maybe not as much as Rabbi Yochanan, but he was no slouch. He was no lightweight. So what does this mean that Rav Chiya Bar Abba is crying that Rabbi Yochanan doesn't have anything for his old age? What's pshat? Rabbi Yochanan himself says, oh, no, don't worry, I have Torah. So, like, I don't get it. Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba knew the value of Torah. Right? You hear the question? meaning what's going on in the Medrash, what's the back and forth. And Rav Henoch has really a startling approach, but one that comes out with a very, very important lesson, a very real lesson for each and every one of us. He says that Rav Chiya Bar Abba, when he looked at the situation, he looked at two separate things. There was what he refers to as the Matzavo HaGashmi and Matzavo HaRuchni. There was Rabbi Yochanan's spiritual stature, and then there was his physical stature, the physical situation and the spiritual situation. He said, okay, great, Rabbi Yochanan, you have a wonderful spiritual situation. You're a huge Talmud Chacham, big Rosh Yeshiva, great. But look at your physical situation. Your physical situation now is very schwer. It's very difficult. The physical situation that you now, what do you really have to your old age? And he was pained over this situation, the physical situation that Rabbi Yochanan found himself. So why did Rabbi Yochanan say, don't cry? So Rav Henoch explains that Rabbi Yochanan was fixing Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba's perspective. Rabbi Yochanan told Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba, you're making a mistake. You're looking at it as there are two different matzavim. There are two different situations I find myself in. There's a physical situation, and there's a spiritual situation. He says, Rabbi Chiya, you have to look at everything that there's one. This world is constant trade-offs. This world is all about what? Knowing what you have to invest for. I always say this world is all about Ikar and Tafa. This world is all about what's primary and what's secondary. That's the secret to this world, to know what's primary and what's secondary. But he said, for example, Rav Henoch says, example, let's say a person really wants a chfeis. Let's say there's something that this person considers very valuable. Very valuable. They have a dream home that they want to save up for, a dream vacation home. And so they're saving and saving and saving, saving and saving, and they're scrimping and not indulging in things. They don't have meat except for yontif and whatever it is. And then they're able to buy their house in the Catskills, Sunshine Estates, whatever it is, right near Woodburn. It's gishmak, it's amazing, right? So when they finally get into that house, are they sad over all the years that they deprived themselves of meat on Shabbos and they only had meat on Yontif, right? Because they wanted to buy this house. No, Baruch Hashem, they bought the house. Great, it was an investment. It was a trade-off, right? Rabbi Yochanan told Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba, there's a trade-off. In life, there are trade-offs in life. He said, you're looking at two separate things. I'm not. I invested this olive orchard, not in, the retirement funds called? 401ks. Mm-hmm. I didn't invest the olive orchard in my 401k. I invested my olive orchard in my Torah growth. I invested my vineyard in my spiritual growth, in my ability to learn Torah, in my ability to keep mitzvos. And he said, that's the mistake that you're making, Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba, to look that you understand. I'm not sad about my situation. I made a great investment. I invested these things very, very wisely. The best investment I could have made. And he says, from here we learn, Rabbi Henoch says, how to face nisyonos in this world. Because we have to look at our physical and spiritual situation together to understand that very often, to grow spiritually, it takes sacrifice of the physical. It takes sacrifice of the gashmius. It's not a simple thing. And there are other discussions about it that the Rav has in this week's parsha, the challenge of wealth. The Rav says it's the greatest challenge the Jewish people have, is the challenge of wealth. Jewish people do not do well with wealth. That's what the Rav points out in one of the ideas brought down in the Rav Chumash. But this yisod in the end of the parsha, v'yehi Moshe bahar, arbaim yom v'arbaim layla, this medrash is telling us the proper perspective that we have to have vis-a-vis investment. What's the investment? What are you investing for? I say this always at Shalosh Shudos, so most of you here don't hear me talk about it. But when I talk about Talmud Torah, the investment to learn Torah.
You say it other times too.
I do it also, the investment, okay? I always say the best investment you can ever make, more than investing in Microsoft stocks in the 90s or Apple in the late, meaning better than GE in the 50s. The greatest investment a person can make is spiritual investment. That's a person that had, that's what you take with you, la'olam vo'ed. You know, we've said the idea from, I believe it was the Kotzker, Mkesef Talva, Esami, right? Mkesef Talva, Esami, right? Im Kesef, with you, the drush is with you, is the money that you lend people going to go with you. Meaning, the money you spend on, I don't know what, you know, whatever it is that you spend on, your what?
Your car.
Your car, well, no, car used to do mitzvahs, you know, I don't know, you know, take my kids to a hockey game, maybe that's also chinuch, you know, okay, there are different ways. I'm sure we can find some type of spending that's not connected to Hashem, if we can imagine such a thing. I don't know, it's hard to imagine, because everything could be based there, everything, right? That's what Parshas Mishpatim is about, that everything could be turned towards Hashem. But let's say there's something that really can't be turned towards Hashem, you know, so something like that, well, what was the cost? What could he have invested that in to have greater payers, to have greater yield from it? And this is something that when we always talk about Mesiras Nefesh, when we talk about Mesiras Nefesh in different ways, you know, it's not simple to be a firm Jew today. There's real Mesiras Nefesh, whether it's in terms of, you know, trying to daven, trying to say some tehillim, Mesiras Nefesh in terms of giving to other people. Right, I've told you the story they say about Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach when he was a little boy, and there was such incredible poverty in the Yeshiva Yashan, in the Jewish community in Yerushalayim of the early 20th century, like incredibly destitute, horrific poverty. And one time, Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, his mother just had a little piece of bread and a little soup for each kid. No, you don't remember the story? Mm-hmm. Right, you remember the story, Cheryl, so I could just stop now. Right? So, I should continue the story. So, a poor man came to the door and asked Reb Shlomo Zalman's mother, do you have any food? And Reb Shlomo Zalman's mother said, look, Mom, I should have nothing. And Reb Shlomo Zalman said, oh, no. I ate already. I have extra food here. And brings in the poor person, and the poor person sits and washes, has a piece of bread, eats a bowl of hot soup, and, like, it's amazing. And the guy thanks him, benches, leaves. Shlomo Zalman's mother was upset at him. I don't understand. Well, that was the food. I don't have anything else for you. If I had anything extra, I would have given it to this Ani. What do you think? So what would Shlomo Zalman say?
He said that it's like a better investment. Like, my mitzvah is going to go.
He said, if I would have eaten it, I would have had a full stomach for the night. But now, that piece of bread, that hot soup, is going to stay with me la'olam vaed. That's going to stay with me la'olam vaed. It's going to stay with me forever. So, it's not simple. It's not simple. The investments that we make, the trade-offs that we make. And that's what Reb Henoch says we learn from this very puzzling medrash, this Yalkut Shemoni. Why was Reb Chiya Bar Abba crying? And what did Reb Yochanan point out to him? That Reb Yochanan says, Moshe Bar Abar Miyom Bar Boim Leila, that's the greatest investment that a person can make. An investment for Torah, an investment for mitzvos. And once we're there, let's connect this to something that the Rav spoke about. The Rav, in one of his lectures, spoke of one of the greatest philosophers of the 20th century, Martin Heidegger, right? He was a big, big philosopher. Really, and if you look up Heidegger on Wikipedia, you'll see Mamish. He's considered one of the most important thinkers of the 20th century. One of the greatest philosophers of the 20th century. But yet, the Rav points out that this great philosopher who taught ethics and spirituality at the University of Berlin, when Hitler rose to prominence, guess what? Heidegger and many of his chevra all became members of the Nazi party. They all embraced Nazism. And, you know, the Rav said, you see that the study of ethics alone can't mold the ethical personality. But yet the Rav would contrast that to Gedol Yisrael, his own grandfather, Reb Chaim. So Reb Chaim was one of the greatest of the greats in Lomdus, right? He created a whole new style of learning called the Brisker Derech. But yet, you know what Reb Chaim wanted on his Matzeva? Two words. Ish Chesed. And the Rav would say that it was by Reb Chaim. I mean, Reb Aaron Lichtenstein Zatzal also spoke about this, that Reb Chaim's, you know, when a woman would give birth to a baby that she couldn't take care of or didn't want, you know where they left the baby? On Reb Chaim's doorstep. Reb Chaim would raise orphans, would raise people that were just left. Adult babies left. He would hire women to nurse the babies and v'chulei. And that was the sensitivity of Reb Chaim. The stories of Reb Chaim, people saw him playing, with the kids, like little games with the little children. Like, Reb Chaim's playing with the little kids? What do you mean? He's Rosh Yeshiva Volozhin. He's the Rav of Brisk. He's one of the greatest minds of the, in the Olam HaTorah. But yet, there's a difference. And the Rav said, why is that? Why is that? By our great Chachamim, you can't find a great Chacham that isn't incredibly sensitive, that isn't a tremendous Balmidos. And he said, in different times he said different things, but one thing that the Chumash brings down is the idea that shows you what Lima HaTorah is. That Torah is the Dvar Hashem. When a person learns Torah, it's not learning math, it's not learning science, it's not learning the philosophy of ethics, you're learning Dvar Hashem. And that's why David HaMelech says, that when a person learns Torah, you connect with something deep, it brings great simcha. But we know also, the Rav points out, it's a whole notion of Parshas Mishpatim, that right after Kabbalah Satorah, right after the Aseres Hadibros, and really Parshas Mishpatim, Sai Mitzad Rashi, Sai Mitzad Ramban, Parshas Mishpatim is being couched in two narratives of Kabbalah Satorah, of the receiving of the Torah, and yet, what is the overwhelming lesson of Parshas Mishpatim? What's the overwhelming lesson of Parshas Mishpatim? That where is God to be found? In your neighbor's donkey. Not in your neighbor's donkey, in your enemy's donkey. That's where God is to be found. God is to be found in that collateral that you take, the loan that you take, that you give to the poor person, and you take a collateral, and he needs a collateral, and you go and give it back to that person every day or every night. That's where God is to be found. Because Torah is not just a system of knowledge. Torah is a Torah's chayim. It's a system of how we have to live. And it means that you have to learn Torah and you have to live Torah. That's how you have the effect of Torah. If a person doesn't learn Torah, Rahmanul Litzlan, so you don't have that effect on the neshama of the Dvar Hashem. As one of the Slanim Rebbe's would say, that learning Torah is a mikvah for your mind. And that's why it's a very important thing. That's why Rav Soloveitchik was very supportive of Limud HaTorah for women as well. How important it is for women to have that experience of Limud HaTorah. But at the same time, we know that Torah has to be translated into the day-to-day. It has to be lived. And that's why the Gemara says, who is a chassid? A person who learns Milei Nezikin. Right? That's one of the mefarshim, one of the opinions in the Gemara, that a chassid is a person who learned matters of interpersonal damages and whatnot. Meaning that's how you become a chassid. That's how you become a pious person, a saintly person. Saintly person, you think, say Tehillim all day. No. A saintly person is you make sure that you don't damage your neighbor. A saintly person is a person that when he sees a lost object, he or she is concerned about returning it to whosoever that might be. And that's something that we have to recognize, that when we learn Torah and we do mitzvos, it's part of forming the personality. It's part of the transformation of the human being. And, unfortunately, when you disconnect it to, when you disconnect Torah from being Dvar Hashem, you disconnect Torah from the mitzvos, so unfortunately there are people who, Rachmana Litzlan, They don't have that effect when they learn Torah. They aren't moved by it. They aren't uplifted by it. They don't become great in Torah. Maybe they have great intellectual prowess. And I told you about the person that I met once who knew every Rashi and Shas Baal Peh, but he wasn't Shomer Shabbos. But knew every Rashi and Shas Baal Peh. And we tested him. I was Gushan Abet. I remember we had a Shabbos at my friend's aunt and uncle's house in Gane Rechavia. And they had these interesting meals with a lot of fascinating people. And this guy's from California. Every Rashi and Shas Baal Peh by heart. I hope I get there one day. I'm not betting on it. Not such a betting person, but I wouldn't bet that I'd get there. But this is something that right after Kabbalah Satorah, when we read of the Dalit Shomrim, when we read about an Eved Ivri, when we read about Gazlanim, we read about Ganovim, we read about really society and civil law, we have to understand because Torah affects everything. And we should see everything through that prism of Torah. That's why it's hard to imagine what can you spend money on that you can't connect to Torah. don't know, it's hard to imagine. Everything, and I'm sure everything could be connected to Torah. Everything could be connected to Torah one way or another. No, Elisa?
Yeah, you buy a candy bar.
You buy a TV, your TV could be connected to Torah, you know? What?
No, can I keep going?
Okay, assuming you're obviously watching appropriate things on the TV, of course. Right, for sure, everything. Everything, everything, everything. Mamish, everything.
Why you say this as an excuse?
So there is a few more ideas we'd get to in this week's Parsha, but all about, again, the theme of the Parsha overall is bringing God into our life. And it's no coincidence that very often Parshas Mishpatim is Shabbos Mevarchim for Adar, either Adar Aleph or the regular Adar, because we know that the month of Adar represents what? Aluf Dor. Adar, spelled Aleph, Dalet, Reish. Aleph stands for Alufo Shel Olam, the Gemara in Shabbos tells us, refers to God. And what does Dor mean? To live, Dira, a dwelling. God dwells amongst us, right? That's the message of Adar, right? That's why the Purim story ultimately falls out. Not the whole development of the story, but the day itself, when you see the Vanahafahu, when the Jews are supposed to be wiped out. And in fact, there's a tremendous victory. That's in the month of Adar, when we think God has abandoned us. But Aluf Dor, no, God is living in the month. And that's why Parshas Mishpatim is a parsha in which we see God is in everything. God is mamish seen through everything. And something that relates to this in the parsha is one of the last mitzvos that we discuss before we come back to the discussion of Kabbalah Satorah towards the end of Chamishi, page 436 in the Art Scroll. So we're told about the mitzvah of Shalosh Regalim, right? And in Pasuk Yudzayin, we say Shalosh Pamim Bashana Yireh Kol Zuchurcha El Penei Adon Hashem. That three times a year, all the males have an obligation to go. Very often the whole family went to go and appear and to be seen by the master, meaning you have to go to the Beis HaMikdash three times a year, right? These are the pilgrimage festivals, Shalosh Regalim, the three holidays when you got to walk. You got to go up to the Beis HaMikdash. So the Rav just says something very beautiful, something very simple, but he says from here we see a fundamental difference between Shabbos and between Yontif. Because on Yontif, where is God? Where's God on Yontif? In the Beis HaMikdash. And what do we have to do? We have to go to God. We have to go see God. But on Shabbos, where's God? On Shabbos, God comes into our home. Right? That's why on Shabbos, there's something called Kabbalah Shabbos. What's Kabbalah Shabbos? Welcoming Shabbos. You're welcoming God into your life. You're welcoming God, right? The Malachim, Shalom Aleichem, Malachi, Ashares, Malachim, and coming into your home. It doesn't happen on Yontif. Right? There's no Kabbalah's Yontif. There's no tefillahs to welcome in Yontif. What?
Pesach, they're all there with me.
You mean Eliyahu HaNavi?
Everybody's there. I need so much help.
Yeah, I was about to say, just so you can make it through, right? Okay? You know,
they're hanging out on the couch.
Well, that might be Malch Rafael, you know, making sure that you're okay, you know. That's something else. That's something else.
I have a question. So when Yontif and Shabbos overlap, we don't see Kabbalah.
We do.
Well, we only do a little.
We do. We absolutely do Kabbalah Shabbos. Why we don't do a long Kabbalah Shabbos? First of all, there are different minhagim, but there's a famous Vart of the Rav that I've said many times. Many times you have to come. Next time there's a Shabbos Yontif, you have to come, Shaul. You hear me talk about it. No, so basically, al regal achas. So basically, if you notice, Kabbalah Shabbos is set up that you have six prakim of Tehillim, right? And then you have Luchadodi. Yeah? Mm-hmm. You with me, right? So what's really the purpose of Kabbalah Shabbos? The purpose of Kabbalah Shabbos is really, meaning L'chadodi is the essence of Kabbalah Shabbos. But the Rav points out that there's some minhagim nusach svar that they say the first two stanzas and the last two stanzas of L'chadodi. Meaning they don't say a full L'chadodi. Why is that? And nusach achshkenaz, because we leave out the full L'chadodi, we don't do anything. We don't do anything else. Just Mizmer Shir, which comes after L'chadodi. Why? What's the third stanza? You know what the third stanza is? Well, it spells Shlomo Halevi, right? Shlomo Halevi Alkabetz. But the third is Mikdash Melech Ir Melucha. Kumitzi Mitoch Hafecha. What do we talk about in L'chadodi? We mourn Yerushalayim. His Ori is Ori. Wake up, get up out of the dust. Right? Kumi Ori. No? Maybe? When's the last time you're Kabbalah Shabbos?
I go a lot.
You go a lot, right? When was the last time at Kabbalah Shabbos, Jessica? No, maybe. A little while ago, right? So basically, starting from the third stanza, what are we talking about? We're talking about Yerushalayim, right? Because Shabbos is supposed to be Me'ein Olam Haba. Shabbos is a day when we're already feeling the third Beis HaMikdash. It's an idea we've said from Rav Wolfson before. But that's the notion, Rav Soloveitchik says, why we stop at Mikdash Melech. We don't want to say it on Yontif, because on Yontif, where are we supposed to be? We're supposed to, it's too painful. It's too painful to say Mikdash Melech Yer Melucha. His Ori, Sori, Snari, Me'ofar, Kumni. Get up, shake off the dust, because Yerushalayim, you've been in the ground, right? So you've been on the floor in the dirt for so long. So that's why we don't have a Kabbalah Shabbos on Yontif. But we do. I mean, we have Mizmor Shelim Shabbos, at least, even the Sukkah Ashkenaz, that there is a notion of Kabbalah Shabbos, even when it's Shabbos / Yontif. Okay? So that's a beautiful idea from the Rav, that you remember this coming Shabbos. And, you know, that's what we're really doing. On Shabbos, Hashem is coming to us. There's a Peledik Ibn Ezra. I even brought the Ibn Ezra to read it. There's a Peledik Ibn... Oh, I shouldn't have closed that to be able to tell you what page it is. Can someone tell me what page is Perikov Beis Pasuk Chaf Aleph? Right? It's Perikov Beis Pasuk Chaf... 430?
431.
Okay, 430 and 431. So this is Inoy Ager, the Ger Lo Sona. It's Perek Chav Beis, chapter 22, Pasuk 20. Chav, the Ger Lo Sona, Velosil Chatzeno, Ki Ger Meyisim Be'eretz Mitzrayim. That you should not afflict or oppress a Ger, because you were strangers in the land of Egypt. Then it says, Kol Almon of Yosom Lo Sa'anun, that you should not afflict any widow, any orphan. And if you look in Rashi, what does Rashi say? We've learned this Rashi before. Kol alman of yosam lo sa'anun, hu hadin l'chol adam. The truth is, this halach applies to everyone. That you are not allowed to cause emotional anguish. Anyone? Ela shadiber akasav v'hove. But the pasuk speaks in what is most common, what's shchiach, what would be the normally, that the people most at danger of being taken advantage of, lefishem teshushay koch v'diber v'davar matzei la'anusam. Meaning this is something that is common, Rachman Olson, by the Alman and the Yosam, that they can be afflicted. Rashi said disappointing, this happens to everyone. Then what does it say? Im anes aneo. So if you'll afflict them, ki im tsaok yitzak elai, they'll cry out to me, shemoi ashmatzaka. So I'll hear his cry, v'chara api, and my anger will burn, v'harag dieschem, and I'll kill you. I'll wipe you out. V'hayu nesheichem al matnos, v'bneichem yisomer. The Ibn Ezra, who always is looking at Pashas Tekrah, says something's off here. What's off? Sorry, I'm not going to test you. It's late at night. It's not fair to test you. I'll only test the teachers. No, I won't test the teachers. Right? We won't, you know, if, I don't know who you took in Azrieli for these things. But
he'll kill you?
Well, no, but when you look at the tenses, kal alman of yosam lo sa'anun. Lo sa'anun is loshan rabin. Lo sa'anun, that you in the plural should not do. And then it says, imanes ane oso, if you do this in the singular, right? Yeah? You with me here? Okay. Then you look at Pasuk Chav Gimel V'chara Api V'haragti Eschem. You, again, in the plural. So what's going on? It starts plural, it switches to the singular, and then it goes back to plural. Right? You hear the question? What's the word I'm looking for?
Consistent.
Consistent, right. It's not grammatically correct. It's not consistent. My ninth grade English teacher, Ms. Mayevsky, Aleh Shalom, I forgot what she would say about this, but she was starker. She was a starker. Ms. Mayevsky, Aleh Shalom. But Imanes Anel, so look at, oh, you don't have the Ibn Ezra in front of you. I'm sorry. Why? But the Ibn Ezra says something amazing. He says, the acher sh'amar losan and loshen rabim, then it goes amar imsane, loshen yachid. What does he say? Listen to what the Ibn Ezra says. Ki kol roe adam shuhu ma'ane yasam ba'almana v'lo yazreim, gam hu yechashev ma'ane. Again. Ki kol roe adam shuhu ma'ane yasam ba'almana. Oh, it says it? The arts girl has it? V'lo ya'azreim, gam hu yechashev ma'aneh. Ah, Baruch Hashem. So the Ibn Ezra is a Peladik Ibn Ezra. It says that why is the pasuk switching between plural and singular? Because it means one person is actively afflicting the Yasam of the Almana. But if there's someone who's seeing this and isn't standing up for the Yasam and Almana, guess what? It's considered as Ki'ilu, you are part of the problem. And again, Malach Biederman points out that if you connect this Ibn Ezra with Rashi, Rashi says it's Lav Davki Yasam and Almana, it's anyone. It's anyone. There's a very powerful idea here about personal responsibility. And at what point can a person say, no, it's not me, right? It's not my responsibility. It's not my fight. No, you know, what the Ibn Ezra is saying is it is your fight. It is your fight. How important it is. And that's what we know, the famous idea we've said many times before, why we known as Yehudim, the famous drasha that's probably not historically correct, but why are we known as Yehudim? Because what's Yehuda's hallmark? What is his trait? Anochi Erevena Miyadi Tevakshena. He tells Yaakov, he says, send Binyamin, and I'm responsible. It's on me. I am going to be the one to take care of Binyamin. Right? This is my responsibility. And what the Ibn Ezra is saying here is the obligation we all have at times to make a stand, at times to speak up. It's not always pleasant to do it. It's not always easy to do it. But we have a responsibility. We talk about in school, you talk about in social circles, you know, you think, oh, little kids could be so cruel. Adults can also be cruel to each other. Social situations, whatever it is. You see a friend doing something not right to another person, speaking badly about another person, saying something hurts another person's feelings. You don't necessarily call them out on it right away, but you have an obligation to do something. If it's going on, you have to stop it. You have to stop it. You have an achrayus. You have a responsibility. You know, that's the famous, famous drasha. Nar ha'isi gam zakanti, v'lo ra'isi tzadik nez avizara mevakesh lachem. Right, what is that? Nar ha'isi gam zakanti, I was a youth, and I got old. I never saw tzadik nez avizara mevakesh lachem. I never saw a tzadik who was forsaken and his children were starving. Really? We don't see, rachmana litzlan, bad things happening to good people. So what's lo ra'isi mean? Famous drasha, lo ra'isi means, I didn't, I never saw a tzaddik that was lacking and didn't do something about it. Ra doesn't just mean to see, it means to get involved. I never saw this and didn't stick up. Right? We're telling Hashem at the end of benching, like, I get it. You give me blessings, I'm going to do the right things with them. I understand what my responsibilities are. I see a tzaddik, Nezav Vizar Mavakish Lachem, I'll be there for the tzaddik. He won't be Nezav. He won't be totally forsaken because I'm going to stand up for them. And that, Ibn Ezra says, is a lesson we see in this week's parsha. From the subtle shifting, from the plural to the singular, back to the plural, we understand that there are times you can't turn away and say, it's not my business. There are times you are supposed to say, it's not my business, right? Like Rabbi, Rabbi Orlovsky, the joke I heard him once say, why in Israel are all the plastic bags made out of, they're clear plastic bags? Why, like plastic bags? They might be a little colored, but they're clear, I mean, they're see-through. You can see what's in other bags, so that when you sit down on the bus, a person next to you doesn't have to ask you, so what's in the bag? They could just look and they see what's in the bag, you know? You know, Chas v'Shalom, not being Malshin, all Jews in Eretz Yisrael, all Toshavei Eretz Yisrael. But we know there's a certain, you know, feeling we're all brothers, we're all sisters, you know, we're all related, but your business is my business. You know, it's only in Jewish places you go with your baby, and like, baby, how many people say, well, why isn't it covered enough? What are you doing? What's going on? Right? There's certain achrayus, certain, like Leah says, you know, she's walking through ShopRite, and you know, an old lady makes a comment, is your baby covered up? She knows it's for sure a Jewish grandmother. For sure it's a Jewish grandmother that's saying something. But the Ibn Ezra says that, you know, obviously there are times that things are not your business, But b'derech chol, you have to be sensitive as to when you have responsibility to act. Do you have responsibility to stand up and do something? And that's what Ibn Ezra says here. And so again, what time is it? No, let's stop now. I apologize. But try 8:40. We'll try 8:40. It'll be in stuff. We got to start on time. I'm sorry, I wasn't here.
I usually finish a page.
Oh, you finish a page?
Yeah,
oh,
we have. Eye
levels. Oh, yeah. one more thing. What did you write the story?
I write.
Write the story.
But every week I usually do a page.
Oh, okay. So for Cheryl to have a page.
Well,
<I'm just kidding. laughs> No, I know. But I think that, you know, just in terms of summing up, looking in the theme of the Parsha, what's Parshas Mishpatim about? Parshas Mishpatim is about understanding. Again, right after the Aseres HaDibros, after this lofty, amazing experience, and when you think about it, after the event that was the most seminal, most important event in all of history, Kabbalah HaTorah was arguably the most important event in all of history, we come to halachos, we come to minutia. Like, this is the first parsha. A lot of people get rocked if they do Rashi for Shnai Mikra Vechatargum, because the Rashis in this week's parsha are very technical, very halachic. They're all Baba Kama, Baba Metzia, Baba Basra Rashis, talking about very technical halachos. We're like, no stories here, you know what I mean? Very little stories in Parshas Mishpatim. Very, very legal, very, very technical. And why is it coming after Kabbalah HaTorah? Because this is exactly the message of Kabbalah HaTorah. This is what the Rav said. This is what the Chidushei Lev is saying. Is that there's not a disconnect between the physical and the spiritual. As the Chidushei Lev, the first idea we said from Rav Henoch, how we have to see that they're connected. There's one matzav. There's not two different scenarios. There's one situation. What are the trade-offs that we have? What are the investments that we're making? As the Rav said, Torah is not the study of ethics. It's not the study of spirituality. Torah itself, b'chvodo v'atzmo, is ruchnius. Learning Torah is not an intellectual endeavor. It's a spiritual endeavor. And we see that from the Parsha, how it's connected to day-to-day living. And this is, you know, the very first question when a person gets to the Bezin Shalmala. What's the first question? The Gemara tells us? Nasasa. No, that's not the first. It's the second. Very good. What's the first? Nasasa v'nasata be'emunah. Right, what does Nasasa v'nasata be'emunah mean? Were you involved in matters of this world with faith? Meaning, were you involved in business with faith? What does that mean? Why is that the first question? You see, it's the first thing that comes up after Kabbalah HaTorah. Torah is not meant to be limited to the shul, to the yeshiva, to the school. Torah is something that has to permeate the entire essence of everything that a person, that a human being is. And that's what Parshas Mishpatim is teaching us. And that's every week, the idea of Shabbos is bringing in Ruchnius. During the week, sometimes Ruchnius gets drowned out. How does Ruchnius get drowned out? Because someone's listening to a song out loud, someone's on the computer, someone's texting a friend, someone, you know, during the week, Ruchnius can get drowned out. There are a lot of the Shabbos. We make space to invite God in. We have to end. Today was the Yahrzeit of the Kotzker. We know one of the most famous varts that we love to say over the Kotzker when he asks his Talmidim, where is God? Talmidim said, where's God? So Hashem's everywhere. Kotzker said, where's God? And what was the answer?
Wherever you let him in.
That's where God is. The Ribbono Shel Olam is wherever you let him in. You just have to open up the door, just even a little bit, and bring in the Ribbono Shel Olam. Hashem should bless us all, that we should learn the lesson of the Parshas Mishpat, of the Anshei Kodesh Tiyun Li, that they're role in this world is not to break free of this world and go live in the Himmel, to live in the heavens, but our role is to bring heaven here to earth.